If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
This year in Illinois, a new bipartisan law went into effect. It hopes to coordinate the state's response to human trafficking from both social services and law enforcement. And we also talked on Wednesday with Bob Surratt a little bit about a law that Governor Pritzker signed this week that mandates that bathrooms and rest areas must post resources for people who might be trafficked. And so I wanted to talk about human trafficking. We hear that phrase. What is it? What does it really mean? Where do the victims come from? And how do people, how are people found, investigated, and prosecuted? And with us to talk about this is Martina Vandenberg. She is the founder and president of the Human Trafficking Legal Center based in Washington. And she is a lawyer. She's a Rhodes Scholar, and she's worked for decades to fight human trafficking. She trains lawyers to work free, to help people, and to work just in all areas of this very, very serious problem. Welcome to the show, Martina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start by defining human trafficking. Martina, what does it encompass?
So trafficking is the forcing of someone to do any kind of labor. So, for example, labor trafficking is using force or coercion to force someone to work for little or no pay. And sex trafficking is forcing someone to do commercial sex using force, fraud, or coercion. The only exception to that force, fraud, coercion rule or force and coercion rule is children, because the sex trafficking of a child does not require force or fraud or coercion, because children simply cannot consent to commercial sex.
So what kind of numbers are we talking about? And I've heard some of your speeches where, you know, there's a lot of different numbers that get thrown out. And again, it's hard to quantify because a lot of this has not been investigated or prosecuted. So what do you think is going on in our country as far as numbers of victims?
So just to put this in a global context, according to the International Labor Organization, they estimate that there are about 27.8 million people around the globe held in all forms of trafficking, all forms of forced labor. In the United States, as you say, it's much harder to quantify, and that's difficult because the prosecution numbers are so low. So if we look at the prosecution numbers, for example, for 2024, which is the last year for which we have any data, there were only 146 prosecutions in the entire country in the federal courts. Of those, 136 were for sex trafficking and just 10 for forced labor. So I think people estimate that there are thousands and thousands of people held in forced labor and in sex trafficking here in the United States, but people don't have actual prevalence numbers that they can point to with any kind of certainty.
Would you say, given your knowledge of this tragedy, that most of the people who are being trafficked are from other countries, or are there some homegrown trafficking going on?
It's both. A lot of the sex trafficking that we see in the United States, particularly the sex trafficking of young people, a lot of those are U.S. children, children born here in the United States, children who've lived here in the United States their entire lives. Some of them were taken from the foster care system and then forced into sex trafficking. Of the cases that we see in our own work of forced labor, it's much more likely that people who are victims of forced labor are actually foreign-born people brought here, frequently brought here on U.S. visas, so brought here on completely legitimate visas, then tricked and forced into labor after they arrive, thinking that they're going to have a legitimate job.
And what percentage would you say are women when it comes to trafficking? It's probably mostly women, but when it comes to forced labor?
Forced labor, according to the ILO, it's more men than women. So if you look at the entire global picture, it's probably more men than women. In the United States, there's certainly forced labor in so many sectors, including the agricultural sector, the construction sector. Those sectors tend to be men. But when we look at domestic servitude, domestic workers held in forced labor, that's almost all women.
And so can you give us, I know there's no typical case, but can you just give us a case maybe that you've worked on where people were brought from another country to do a certain type of work and how it was investigated and how the conspiracy or whatever the group, how they made money. Can you just kind of lay that out for us so we have a tangible idea?
Yeah, so I think maybe the best example to use is one closer to home for you. It's a case that was just convicted. They just sentenced the defendant. The case is one of a woman who was bringing and smuggling migrants to Mexico, women and children from Mexico, into Highland Park, Illinois.
Oh.
She held those victims in debt bondage. She told them that they owed her immense sums of money for smuggling them into the country. She threatened to kill their families back in Mexico. I mean, traffickers frequently know where the family members live back in the country of origin. This case, they certainly knew where the families lived and threatened to kill them. She was sentenced to 108 months in federal prison. But I think the through line in this case, I wanted to use a recent case in Illinois because I thought it would be relevant to your audience, but the through line that I've seen in the 20 years that I've been working on these cases is that traffickers find people's vulnerabilities. They use those vulnerabilities to coerce them into work. A case that I worked on was a case actually of a domestic worker brought to the United States from Africa, brought to the United States actually by a foreign diplomat, held in that diplomat's house for 4 years, never paid. Not paid a penny, and punished horrendously if she didn't do exactly what the traffickers demanded. And in that case, she ran away. It often takes one victim, I think in the Highland Park case, in the cases in Washington, D.C., it takes one victim running away and trying to find help, and that usually is the first step to cracking open one of these forced labor cases.
So you think, from your experience, that it's not that the law enforcement is investigating these crimes and come upon these rings, if you will, but really just it's victim, it's victim driven.
You know, frequently what we say is that victims rescue themselves. I think that's particularly true in the forced labor side of the house. There are investigations on sex trafficking, but those tend to start out, I think, as, investigations of commercial sex, right? There's an investigation of prostitution, or the Vice Squad is going out, and they will find a sex trafficking case. The forced labor cases are harder to find because oftentimes the victims are doing work that's perfectly legal, right? They're doing domestic work in someone's house, perfectly legal. But as soon as you start forcing that person and failing to pay them, and subjecting them to physical violence, suddenly we have catapulted into the field of human trafficking and forced labor. It's no longer just regular, normal work.
I have a question. So when you have these people who are being forced, and whether it's agriculture or hotel working, home cleaning, nannies, how is it hard to prove, and is it hard for a jury or a judge to understand the coercive nature of their labor, meaning they're not wearing chains every day to work and they have the opportunity to leave? Is that a hard thing for the average person or judge to understand?
I think that Hollywood has done us no favors, because oftentimes people think that all human trafficking looks like Taken, where someone
right.
is kidnapped and chained and sold off as chattel. So that sort of Hollywood version of trafficking makes it very difficult for juries to understand what trafficking actually looks like, what the coercion actually looks like. But I think we are seeing some success on the criminal side, although I think the number of prosecutions is down. But we're also seeing success on the civil side. So that's when a trafficking victim brings their own case in federal court against the defendant or someone who facilitated the trafficking. And obviously they're not putting anyone in prison, but they are winning damages in a lot of these cases. And so juries do understand when you explain to them the elements of force, the elements of coercion. What prosecutors will frequently say to me, though, is it's very hard to get a conviction. It's very hard to get a jury to convict when the victim witness herself does not testify. So juries believe people. Juries believe victims who testify.
And, you know, and I imagine the people who are the victims are not the best witnesses in that they're probably terrified. They're probably, maybe they don't speak perfect English. Maybe they can't even articulate, you know, some of the things that they've been through. And I would imagine that's a hard thing to do with, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt when it comes to that. I do want to talk, Martina, about the civil cases. So I know that you've been involved in these civil cases. So a victim is suing, let's say, the person who brings them from Mexico. But what is that really going to be collectible? So you get a $10 million judgment against somebody. Is that going to be collectible? And then I'd like you to address, what are the ancillary defendants here in a case like that?
Right. So let me just start very quickly and respond to your comment about people being on the stand.
Sure.
And you know, in my experience with my clients, I have seen people so afraid step up on the stand and testify before a judge and walk off, and literally they look 2 feet taller, right? They have told their story. They've had their day in court. That's so powerful. And it's their decision to testify. Obviously, we work very hard with them before they testify so that they know exactly where they have to sit and what they're going to see and who's going to be in the room. But on a civil case, you know, what happens in so many of these cases is that they settle. And so the defendants will say, you know, rather than trying to go to a jury and trying to draw this out, and rather than this being in the papers, I would rather just pay a settlement. And the most famous settlement that we have seen lately is actually in a sex trafficking case, in the Epstein case. So the Epstein victims sued J.P. Morgan, the bank.
Right.
They didn't sue J.P. Morgan for trafficking them. J.P. Morgan, the bank, didn't traffic them. The allegation was that J.P. Morgan, the bank, facilitated Jeffrey Epstein's trafficking of these girls and these children, right? These were very, very young women and girls. And the bank, rather than going to trial before a judge, the bank, J.P. Morgan, you know, went through discovery. They gave documents to the Epstein victims' lawyers, and pretty soon I think they just decided we're going to settle this case. But J.P. Morgan Bank settled that case with the Epstein victims for $290 million. So,
wow.
In answer to your question, you know, a settlement is much easier to collect than a judgment. And I have had judgments, very large judgments, that I have had to spend years and years trying to collect. But you have to be tenacious, and you just have to never give up.
Martina, how, in a case like that, where let's just say a hotel chain, I've heard this, mm-hmm. you know, makes a point of hiring people who they know or maybe should have known that were being trafficked. What's the obligation of a J.P. Morgan or a Hilton hotel to do some looking into who the people are that are being hired, and then how is that proven?
So it's definitely the case that large corporations need to do due diligence. They need to look into who they're hiring. You know, in the cases, so when we think of hotels generally, I think people immediately think sex trafficking, that hotels are a site of sex trafficking, and there are children in those hotels, and the hotel manager may be complicit. We've seen those cases, right? We've seen those cases, criminal and civil. What people generally don't or understand is that the people doing the landscaping at the hotel or doing the housekeeping at the hotel or even clerking at the front desk, they may also be held in forced labor. And in some of those cases where we've seen forced labor in hotels, the hotels, very large hotel companies, you know, very large chains that you've heard of and probably stayed at, have subcontracted to some sort of labor broker, and the labor broker is trafficking the staff in the hotel. And, you know, in the past, the hotels haven't been indicted for that. The labor broker has been indicted. But I think we are moving much more quickly now towards a situation where that hotel owner that contracted with a labor contractor that was committing forced labor, where they knew or should have known that that was happening, they can potentially face criminal charges, and definitely they can face civil litigation.
Do we need stronger laws to require companies to do more due diligence and to look into these issues?
I would say yes and no. So On the international side, looking at sort of global supply chains and all of the forced labor that taints all of the goods imported into the United States, if we're looking at global supply chains, companies need to be doing much, much more to clean their global supply chains of forced labor. They need to be doing much, much more looking at the factories that are making the sportswear, for example, that they're importing into the United States. You know, the interesting thing is the companies are very vigilant about making sure that there's quality control. They're very vigilant about making sure that, you know, health and safety codes for the goods are followed. They're a little more lackadaisical about making sure that there's no forced labor in the supply chain. So on that side of the house, in terms of, you know, the clothes we wear and the food we eat that's brought in from outside the United States, absolutely more due diligence is needed and absolutely better laws are needed. In the United States proper, where we have forced labor here and where we have sex trafficking here, my feeling is that we have excellent laws that aren't enforced. The laws on the books that have been on the books since 2000 are superb, some of the best in the world. But what we don't have is adequate prosecution or appropriate prosecution. And sadly enough, what we see so much is actual prosecution of victims rather than prosecution of perpetrators.
I was wondering if that happened, that you maybe have people being prosecuted for being illegal here. In fact, they're being held against their will or they're prostitutes and they're being prosecuted as opposed to being treated as victims. I would imagine that there needs to be some education with not only law enforcement, but like you said, with prosecutors.
Absolutely. One positive development that has happened recently is now there is a federal law that allows trafficking victims who are convicted of crimes their traffickers forced them to commit. There's a law that now allows them to remove those convictions from their record as if they never happened.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
You know, the most wicked examples I ever saw of this, I was in San Diego years ago, and I was meeting with juvenile public defenders, so public defenders representing children in criminal cases. And those lawyers said, we are defending children who are facing prostitution charges, which is an oxymoron because children can't engage in prostitution. There's no such thing. So those children were being prosecuted for so-called child prostitution. At the same time, they were witnesses in a case against their own trafficker on the federal side.
Ugh.
So to the locals, the children were criminals. To the federal authorities, the children were witnesses. And so it was so confusing how the children could be both witnesses and defendants at the same time.
Just a lack of understanding. Martina,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. Martina Vandenberg, please come again. We really didn't even make a dent in this topic. The Human Trafficking Legal Center based in Washington, how can people contact you?
So the best way to contact us is through our website, which is www.htlegalcenter.org. And people can also email info@htlegalcenter.org. And thank you so much for your attention to this issue and for inviting me to join you today.
Anytime, and you keep up the great work, Martina.